Of course, it isn't as it should be, said Mrs. St. Pancreas, as she showed her guest Robertson into the great hall. I mean, restoration's a lost art these days, isn't it? The Denistons' place is much more picturesque than this. But we have got a ghost. We see him very often. And do you like that? Asked Robertson. Well, it isn't as if he does any harm. Sometimes, in fact, he's quite entertaining, so we have to like it. I expect you'll hear him before dinner. Oh, here's Henry. Mr. St. Pancreas shook hands with Robertson. Nice to meet you again. How do you like the house? Cost me a bit, but I do like atmosphere. His wife gazed into her velvet lap. I had to mention the ghost to him, Harry, or he'd wonder who was playing the organ. Not an organ, Robertson said. Yes, you see, he likes to amuse himself before dinner by playing little tunes, and people think it odd if we don't explain beforehand. Who is he? Is there a legend? Robertson asked. The Dunbar family, who used to live here, weren't aristocrats or anything like that, so it isn't a very exciting one. The Dunbars were all successful actors on the comedy stage in their day. We have quite a lot of their theatre programmes in the library, mouldering old things, you know, with their names printed on them and the parts they played. Shakespeare? Asked Robertson. Not exactly. As far as I can gather, they played in farce and sang comic songs. The best of the lot apparently was Jeremiah, who is going to play the organ to us before dinner. He was a jolly man, but unfortunately had a very bad temper. He used to dramatize every situation. I believe his wife and children had to put up with the most appalling scenes. All about nothing. If he hadn't dramatized his own death, we shouldn't...
Have to endure him now,
Mr. St. Pancreas put in.
Shh,
his wife said, and glanced up at the minstrel's gallery. Do be careful, dear. I'd hate to put him out of temper. As I was saying, Mr. Robertson, he dramatized his death. You see, he was a martyr to indigestion. This gave him a very red face. His contemporaries used to call him Beefy Dunbo. And if he wasn't careful with his diet, he got heartburn. You can trace all that in the letters we've found. Well, this made a good deal of trouble for his wife. She had to buy him the most delicate foods, which cost a great deal, so that they were up to their ears in debt. And he had a special leaning towards fish, and this had to be personally boned by his wife before he would touch it.
To cut a long story short, said her husband,
who seemed to be listening for something,
one day Mistress Dunbo had the misfortune to leave quite a large bone in a sole which she'd fried for her husband. She might have done it purposely. If she did, more power to her elbow. Anyway, Jeremiah, who ate far too quickly, got it stuck in his throat. He started choking, and his face grew so red that they were all scared out of their wits. Staggering away from the table, he managed to gasp out... What was it he managed to gasp out, Agatha?
Mrs. St. Pancreas fumbled in her bag. I've got it scribbled on an envelope. Here we are. He said, Mistress, you have taken my life away. My blood be on this roof tree forevermore. Until the fall of this house, I will walk within it, and when the last brick crumbles to dust, I will walk upon the sight of it. Only one grain of mercy will I leave you. Never shall living soul behold my face. And as far as I know, nobody ever has.
Seems a great deal for a choking man to say, doesn't it?
said Robertson. Mr. St. Pancreas moistened his lips.
His descendants probably elaborated the story. Anyhow, there it is for what it's worth. Personally, I rather like the fella. He gives no trouble, except that I'm not keen on organ music. But he does add to the atmosphere, don't you agree?
Robertson agreed. Oh, quite. And has he got a special room to haunt?
Certainly not, said Mrs. St. Pancreas. He just goes wherever he likes. Bless him.
What does he play?
Oh, quite jolly pieces sometimes, aren't they, Agatha? He's progressive, too. For instance, I went into the library last night, and there he was, with his back to me, of course, reading a bound volume of Punch. Can't dislike a fellow who reads Punch, can you? By the way, do you mind ghosts? Perhaps I should have asked you before.
No, answered Robertson.
Well, that's fine, because I expect you'll see a good bit of him during the weekend. We'd miss old Jeremiah if he went.
What's that? Cried Robertson suddenly. He had heard the rushing of a great wind. Mr. St. Pancreas smiled.
He's blowing up the pipes, or whatever you call it. You can't see him, he's just round the corner of the gallery. Ah, here we go.
The music swelled up, filling every corner of the hall. Quite, tuneful, Robertson said. He plays very well.
Not always. Agatha and I left some music by that American fella Gershwin on the organ last week, just to see what he'd do. But he can't sight-read very well. He soon stopped trying, went back to his usual stuff.
Would you like to have a look at him? Asked his wife. He won't mind a bit. And you may as well meet him now as later. He never turns round, of course, so there's nothing to be afraid of.
Not a bit, agreed her husband. Come along up.
Perhaps he won't like a stranger to stare at him, Robertson mumbled to his hostess. Not a bit of it, she slapped him playfully. Robertson arose. All right, lead on.
We'll go up the stairs to the gallery and round the corner, Mr. St. Pancreas said. Careful on the steps, old man, they're slippery.
They went up. Robertson hung back a little. Perhaps he's sensitive. You go. I shouldn't like to make things awkward for you.
You'd like to meet our nice friend, wouldn't you, Jerry?
Mr. St. Pancreas called out. The music stopped. Someone laughed, Robertson said.
He did, I expect. That means it's okay. Come on. No need to be scared. Just round the corner.
But when they'd rounded the bend and the music was deafening, Robertson shut his eyes. Go on, look, said Mrs. St. Pancreas. It's nearly dinner time, and you'll be off before we know where we are. I haven't the least idea where he goes to, but it's quite amusing to watch him disappear. Robertson looked. He saw seated on the long organ stool before the instrument what looked like a bundle of old clothes. There was a cape on the shoulders and a nightcap on the head. Of the actual body, only the feet on the pedals were visible. The figure rocked and swayed with abandon, pressing the keys joyfully. "Aren't you afraid he'll turn round?" Robertson whispered. Then he felt a terrible dropping in his belly, for the ghost had stopped playing.
"Not he," said Mr. St. Pancreas. "He's a man of his word."
And at that point Jeremiah started again, playing with unusual relish a piece by John Blow. "Nearly dinner time," Mrs. St. Pancreas murmured. "This will be the finale." And so it was. The ghost took his hands from the keyboard, and again there came that sound of tearing wind. The cape on Jeremiah's shoulders whirled round his head in a cloud of dust. Robertson sneezed so violently that his head jerked down. When he raised it again, the ghost had gone. "And that's that," said his hostess, just as the dinner gong rang. Her husband's face creased with contentment.
"Good. I'm hungry, and I haven't got indigestion like poor old Jerry. Come along, Robertson. I hope you like duck."
They spent a pleasant enough evening. Mr. St. Pancreas told Robertson how he had made all his money, and Mrs. St. Pancreas turned the wireless on and off, discovering several strange new stations uncharted in any radio news. Robertson drank a great deal of very good port. He wasn't eager to go to bed, but his kind hostess, perceiving this, hastened to reassure him. He should have no fear, she said, because she'd seen the ghost in the spare room the previous night, and Jeremiah seldom visited the same place twice in succession. Mr. St. Pancreas even gave Robertson a bottle of port to take to bed with him.
"Perhaps we shouldn't have asked you to come here, really, old man. But we've got so used to Jerry that we never imagine anybody being scared."
"Oh, I'm not scared," Robertson said. "I'm having a new experience." The port was mellow within him.
"Don't you imagine I'm scared of you, Massa Dunbow?" he called, cupping his hands to his mouth so that Jeremiah, if he was still in the gallery, might hear him plainly.
I shouldn't do that if I were you," murmured his host. "He is a bit touchy."
Robertson said good night to Mrs. St. Pancreas and went upstairs with his host.
"Oh, by the by," said the latter as they turned into the left wing, "you can see Jerry's face, even if he won't show it. Here's his picture."
He held up a candle. He hadn't had the house electrified, for he liked the atmosphere. "So, this is he," remarked Robertson, staring at the portrait of a jolly gentleman in a lemon-coloured periwig. Looks rather fun, doesn't he? Fat, too. Can't see his eyes for cheeks. I bet he hit the bottle in his day. His host pushed him gently into his room.
Good night, he said. See you tomorrow.
Robertson shut the door. His room was colourfully furnished and lavishly candle-lit. There was no four-poster, but a low divan bed. There were no portraits on the walls. He examined the few bad watercolours to reassure himself that none of them had any sinister intent, and got into bed. He remembered at once, to his annoyance, that he hadn't blown out the candles. Oh, let them burn out, he thought, and fell fast asleep. He slept soundly, until 3 o'clock in the morning, when the ghost of Jeremiah Dunbow came in and stood by the bed. Robertson, waking, knew that he was there, but made no sign. He'll go, he thought. He must. He'll disappear when he thinks he has no power to wake me. Then he heard a sound in the room. Jeremiah was whistling a cheerful tune. I won't stir, Robertson whispered to himself, feeling the sweat on his cheeks. Then Jeremiah sang. It was a dubious song, well suited to the fat voice. Robertson did not stir. Then Jeremiah began to get angry. He had been a popular figure on the stage in his day, and he liked appreciation. Jeremiah pulled at Robertson's quilt. Robertson cried out. His heart dropped through his stomach, and his flesh froze. Then he was calm, no longer afraid. There was silence. He heard the click of the door. After a time, the wind rose in the organ, and music filled the halls and winding galleries. Mr. and Mrs. St. Pancreas slept and heard nothing. Jeremiah came back. Robertson raised the quilt. Then he got out of bed and went to the foot of it. The candles burnt brightly. He looked at Jeremiah, at his fat red face and small sunken mouth. Master of himself, Robertson bowed. Mr. Dunbow, he said calmly, triumphantly. You are not, I fear, a man of your word. I think you promised that never should living soul behold your face. I have, I think, got the better of you. Walking to the dressing table, he searched for cigarettes and matches. He wondered if Jeremiah had been addicted to tobacco. If so, he would hand him a pipe. There will be a pretty story to tell his hosts in the morning. He fumbled under the bed for his slippers, for his feet were suddenly cold. Jeremiah spoke.
So I did promise, he said, and smiled happily, for he was dramatizing the moment. So I did, in truth.
And he offered Robertson his arm.
And I have not broken it. You died of fright. Let me see. Some 15 minutes ago. Shall we proceed, sir?